We left off the last year on Chavtes Amud Aleph, and we were right up to the medium width lines. The Mishnah had said that, according to Rabbi Yoshua, everyone says normally Me'ein Shmona Esrei. What is Me'ein Shmona Esrei? So the Gemara here cites a debate. So on the last two words of the narrowest lines, Rabbi Yoshua Omer Me'ein Shmona Esrei. My Me'ein Shmona Esrei. Rav Amar Me'ein Kol Bracha Ubracha. Rav says that basically you take every single bracha in the tefillah. I don't know if this applies to the first three and last three brachos, but it certainly applies to the middle brachos. Instead of saying Atachonin Adon Das Mamein Veno Shmina, etc., you just say something. Maybe you say Chaninu Mitcha Devin Avaskel Bracha Tashem Chaninu Adas, and each bracha you abridge, but you still wind up with 18, or for us 19 brachos. And that's Rav's opinion. Rav's is not the well-known opinion, because Rav's is not the opinion that we actually paskin like. So rather, Shmuel says, Havineinu Hashem Elokeinu Adas Drachecha. And Shmuel now, the Gemara is actually going to present us the text of Havineinu, the complete text of Havineinu. And again, I personally have never said Havineinu, so I can't say that it's a familiar text. What? I'm sorry? No, there are circumstances in which it would theoretically be appropriate, but, you know, I don't know if I've ever even been in those circumstances. If I have, I wouldn't even know Havineinu. Like, it's probably not printed in the Siddurim, so it would be easier just to say the Shmon Esrei. If you don't have a Siddur, then what's that?
Now you Google it.
You could Google it. I want to know if Google turns out well. Yes, it's probably, I wonder if any Siddur is actually printed Havineinu. But Shmuel says, Havineinu Hashem Elokeinu Adas Drachecha. So we'll just go through the bracha. Most of it is fairly straightforward. You can see how it maps to each of the brachos. Now, Rashi observes here on Havineinu. Rashi writes, if you just take a look, it's fairly high up on the page. He writes, Havineinu ve'enu mevarech ala shomei atfila b'chol ha'bracha shebein shalosh rishonos l'shalosh achronos. So Rashi says that you make one bracha at the end, which is Baruch Ata Hashem shomei atfila, and all of the middle 12, or we'll call them 13 brachos, you lump into one text without any chasima, without any Baruch Ata Hashem. And that is that's the tefillah that you're actually reciting. So but what the Gemara doesn't state, although it would seem to be obvious, is that the first three brachos and the last three brachos you recite regularly. And the only thing that you're changing are the middle brachos. In some ways, it's interesting, because if you were to do that, then you would wind up with how many brachos total?
6 plus 1.
7, right? Which is really the minimum number of brachas we normally have at San Chavis and Yom Tov. That's what we do. So here, during the weekday, it would be the same thing, which is kind of interesting, because we've discussed this issue before. Supposing, you know, it never happens to any of us, of course, we know, but on Shabbos, you're davening, and you are not thinking too much, and after you say Hakel HaKadosh, you say Atachonei Ladam Das. Yeah. So the halacha is that you finish the bracha, and the reason why you can finish the bracha, this is not true in Musaf, but the reason you finish the bracha, because really, mean din, you should have recited all 18 brachas on Shabbos. But the Chachamim were lenient with us, and therefore they said you don't have to recite them at once. But you started the bracha already, so you finish the bracha. So in some ways here, Havineinu reduces this to a Shabbos. You know, we could shut that off. So for me, it's distracting at least. Or close the browser down. Yeah. Thank you. So here's the Nosach HaBracha. Havineinu Hashem Elokeinu Ladas Drachecha. May God our Lord make us understand, or give us understanding to know your ways. That's Atachonei Ladam Das. Umol es levavenu liyirasecha. And fashion or shape, literally circumcised, but doesn't mean that. Our hearts to fear you. That's Hashiveinu. That's asking God to bring us close to him. Then the Nosach in the Gemara, slightly different than the Rif, is v'sislach lanu, that's slach lanu avinu kichotanu, lihios ge'ulin, in order to be redeemed, which is goel Yisrael. Then, v'rachakenu mimach ovenu, keep us far away from our sicknesses, that's rifa'inu, v'dashinenu b'ne'os artecha, and sate us, make us be prosperous in the dwelling places of your land, the word Rashi explains the word neos is from the word naveh, like binos desha yarbitzeni. I believe actually Rashi in this week's parsha, yesterday's parsha, has a long Rashi. I'm trying to remember, on the word erva,
yeah,
where he talks about the on es mikora he'era. So Rashi says, right, he gives that example. He says he'era, which is ayin reshud, is really the root. It means to reveal, to uncover. But you have the word erva, you get this infix vav, and he picks the example of also za'ava, va'yisa la'za'ava, which is from the word to tremble, yazua, zayin, what's that?
Velozami.
Right, veloza, which is, interestingly enough, that's funny, because that's zayin vavayin, it's not zayin ayin yud. Erva is, I didn't think about it as I read that Rashi, erva is, he'era is ayin reshur. But either way, you get these words with the vav that's fixed in here, so the word neos in the singular, I guess, is naveh. That's what Rashi says here. He doesn't quote the other examples. So make us seated in the dwelling places of your land. That's barei halenu. Then unefutzosenu me'arba tikabetz. That's the brach of kibbutz galios. Mikabetz netchemo Yisrael. And the next one is the only one that gives the Rishonim some trouble. V'hatoim al datcha. Then the next word is a tricky how you vocalize it. Of course, Rashi gives quotes two interpretations here, suggests two interpretations. The first one is Vatoim al Dancha Yishafetu, or Yishafetu, if you want to get probably good rabbinic Hebrew, which means those who stray from your word. Vatoim al Dancha Yishafetu, they shall be judged. Now, that presumably corresponds to Hashiva Shoftenu from Rishona. The problem, Rashi cites this interpretation. The problem is it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. He doesn't explain why, but he quotes a second Lashon. If you take a look in Rashi, Vatoim al Datcha. So it's about a little further down than halfway through the narrow lines of the Gemara. So go over to the right side of Rashi. Vatoim al Datcha, Ha'ovrim al Devarecha. That's what we explained. Yishafetu should be judged keneged staka umishpat. Then Rashi says, Lashon Acher, Vahatoim b'mishpat al datcha yishpatu. So here it's not Vahatoim al datcha, but rather Vahatoim al datcha yishpatu. In terms of what the words mean. And it means those who stray, those who don't judge properly, should come to judge in accordance with your law. Meaning, Hashiva Shoftenu k'Rishona. Rashi explains, Hashiveim lilamdam, bring them, cause them to return to do tshuva, to teach them, lishpok tidvarecha, to judge in accordance with your words. V'chein ikar nirali, v'chein balachos gedolos. Rashi prefers this interpretation. And I think the answer, the explanation as to why is pretty obvious, because the other one is basically asking God to punish the sinners, but that works better with the next bracha, v'lam al shinam al pisitva, which already is expressed in the next line, which is, on the fourth, at the end of the fourth medium width line in the Gemara, v'al harishayim tanif yodecha, you should wave your hands in punishment against the wicked people. That's v'lam al shinam al pisitva, that's birkas aminim. So it doesn't, atom adatcha, doesn't make sense, yishafetu, they should be judged, which means they should be punished, like uvachol alohei mitzrayim e'eseh shafatim, because that's not what the bracha is about. The bracha is asking for the restoration of justice, that Torah law should be what the judges judge. Then, v'yismuchu tzadikim, that's ala tzadikim ve'ala chasidim. And then, b'biyan irecha uv'tikun hechalecha. That's the bracha bonei Yerushalayim. And uvitzmichas keren l'david avdecha v'arichas ne'er l'ven yishayim mishichecha, it sounds like the song, which is the bracha v'semach david avdecha. Finally, terem nikra, the riff has, terem nikra atah saneh ki atah oneh b'chol eis tzara v'tzuka, baruch atah Hashem shomeh tefila. The last part, obviously, is the overarching bracha of shomeh tefila. So that is what Shmuel claims is. Well, that's where we, presumably Anenu's piece is taken from. So Shmuel says that Me'ein Shmona Esrei that Rabbi Yoshua posits in the Mishnah as the Tefillah is Tefillah Sabinenu. It's not each bracha a bridge. It's not 18 brachos or 19 brachos a bridge, but rather it is the Gimel, the Gemara doesn't say, but that is fairly obvious from what from the fact that Havinenu doesn't have any text from the beginning of the end, that that is the Gimel Rishonos, Gimel Achronos, and one bracha which includes all the themes in the middle with a single Baruch Atah Hashem at the end.
Was Shmuel the author, or Shmuel?
The Shmuel, I don't, presumably not. Presumably Shmuel is identifying what was known, although it is an interesting question. If the tefillah existed already, what did Rav think the tefillah was about? That's a good question. I don't know.
It sounds like from the language of the Gemara that it wasn't that Shmuel. Shmuel was not the author.
Correct. Shmuel just identifying what is. So, what makes me wonder is what did, this must have been, I don't think Shmuel made it up. Shmuel was saying, oh, you know what Me'ein Shemona Esrei? This is Me'ein Shemona Esrei. So, if Shmuel didn't make up this tefillah, if it's a tefillah that's floating around in Babel, what did Rav think the tefillah was about? Right, because it had to come from somewhere, and this would seem to be fairly obvious. So, I don't know. I'm pretty sure the Rishonim don't address this. But that's the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, and we accept Shmuel's opinion. Now the Gemara says, "Layit ale Abaye eman de mitzale havinenu." Abaye literally means to curse someone who would daven havinenu instead of Hol Shmona Esrei. In the notes in the Gemara here, they tell you to take a look at Tosas and Ksubas Daf Beis and Beis. And Tosas Ksubas Daf Beis and Beis, where the Gemara thinks has a language of Parich Rav Achai. So Tosas there quotes a debate. I think they quote Rashbam, who says the Rav Achai in the Gemara there is Rav Achai Gon, which means it's a very late addition to the Gemara, which is not impossible, but I don't think any late addition to the Gemara that we assume, generally speaking, has a name on it. In other words, what happened a lot of times in the Gemara is the Gaon, in particular the Halachos Gedolos, when he wrote, so he wrote in Bavli Aramaic, that was his dialect. So if the halacha, if you were reading the Halachos Gedolos, his comments in the Gemara, it would look just like the anonymous layer of the Gemara. So if he wrote them, and we sometimes have this in manuscripts, where you'll have the Gemara, and then it says Peirush, you know, or Peyud in a Strich, and then you have the commentary of the Halachos Gedolos for somebody else, and then the Gemara continues. But sometimes in the manuscripts, the word Peirush fell out, and because the dialect of the Halachos Gedolos is indistinguishable from the Gemara, it looks like it's just part of the Gemara. Like in Bava Metzia, the Ramban and the Ritva point out at the beginning of the Masechta, I think Ritva especially formulates that there are a lot of passages in this Masechta that are from the Halachos Gedolos. They both, the Ramban, identify something in the first sugya, which becomes Halachos Gedolos. So that's what Rashbam... Yeah.
From a historical perspective, when did the Bahag look?
That's a very good question, because I believe there's a debate about who wrote the Bahag. I believe the two options were either Shimon Kayara or Rav Yudai Gon. I never knew the dates. I was looking at this recently, and one of them is at least as early as 8th century. I don't think earlier than that, but I think it's early. Maybe early.
When do we attribute to the Gemara as being kind of closed?
I'm sorry?
When do we attribute the Gemara being...
Well, that's really complicated. You know, the popular understanding, which is almost certainly incorrect, and there are Gaonim and Rishonim who know this, is that Ravashi, the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Radaf Pei Vav, says Ravina Ravashi Sof Lahora. So that is often said to me that Ravina Ravashi completed the Gemara. Now Ravina, I think, dies in 420 something, and if you presume Ravashi may live further into the 5th century, but certainly by the mid to end of 5th century, according to that account, the Gemara should be done. The Balei Tosfos point that in any number of locations where you have comments in the Gemara that are clearly post-Ravashi. And Ravashi could not have written them. If you look more importantly at the Geras of Shrira Gaon, when he describes Ravashi's great accomplishments, and there are a lot of them, he doesn't mention a single word about the Chasimas HaTalmud. And it sounds like he doesn't at all connect it that way. In fact, it might even be he has the Gersa of Ravina and Ravasi, not Ravashi, since Smolis, if you look in certain Nuschos of the Igeras. So I think the assumption is that sometime in the late 5th or even into the 6th century, what you might call the stem of the Gemara is still being composed. There is material that has been hypothesized to be even later, post-Islamic conquest, but not necessarily very much of it, but I'm not really sure that it's absolutely clear that that's actually true. But I think our tendency to look at the Gemara as a closed book is a little bit artificial. And I think it does become closed, but I would say today, if I were to draw an analogy, and I hope the historians will not give me too much of a hard time, you know, canonical books at a certain point are closed, but they may not be closed as you know, the first generation that has the canonical books are not necessarily thinking, oh, this book is an absolutely closed book. There may be some record. It's hard to know what's going through their minds. Before the Gemara, I can cite really two examples where I think you see this. One, and this is where I may get some pushback, but from the scholars of Qumran, so some of the Pisharim, some of the commentaries on biblical books, the way they're written, if you look at the scrolls that are found, is you'll have the verse from Nevi'im. I don't know, you might have the Sintarol. You probably have Sintarol also. And then you'll say, in the middle of the text, it will say, Upishro, and its interpretation is. And of course, they're busy explaining these prophetical events on their own days, of course, because some of them think they're kind of living at the in the days of the predictions of the prophets. And there are other aspects also. And so writing something into a text, even though you're indicating it's commentary, you cannot envision anybody today, I think, writing a biblical commentary and inserting their commentary into the text, even if they put it in a different font and with a note. And I think that Qumran, they still may think they're writing Bible. There's other evidence to this as well in the whole genre of rewritten Bible. So it's hard to know what exactly goes through their head. But a better example of this, which I think is clear, is when you look at the Mishnah itself. Right? We tend to think that Rebbe and his generation, Rebbe, that same Gemara in Bava Metzia, and Daf Pei Vav, says Rebbe, Rebbe Nasan Sof Mishnah. Now, you can see in the first generation of Amoraim, like Levi, and even Rav, they are emending the Mishnah. They will instruct their Tanaim, their Mishnah Brisa reciters, Tani X, change the text to this. I don't think you find that once you get to the second, third generation, it becomes exceedingly rare, because over a few couple of generations, the book, I think, becomes canonical. I suspect the same thing happens
what
with
the Mishnah.
I mean, approximately 200. You know, is about around when Rebbe dies, maybe a little earlier. But I think that we have a tendency to view works that are canonical as having become, you know, canonical as they were written or officially stamped. And I'm not sure that that's the way human societies work.
Didn't they canonize the 24 books,
Well, not so simple. Because if you look in the Mishnayos in Yadayim, which most people don't learn. If you're going to learn Yadayim, you want the fun part in Yadayim is to learn. What's that? Meseches Yadayim. It's the second to last Mesechta in Taros. It's a 4-chapter Mesechta. You know, after you've gotten through Kalim and Alas. So there are a couple of very interesting, some of the most interesting passages.
There's no Gemara in
Taros.
So no one learns any.
In Daf Yomi, they would never do it. That's correct.
No one has any exposure.
That's correct. Yes.
Like Yavamas, no one has exposure to.
Well, Yavamas people do Daf Yomi, so they.
Even now, yeah.
Yes, but so. But Yavamas was still more mainstream. It might be difficult, but it was mainstream. But Meseches Yadayim is very interesting because there are two digressions in the Mishnah there. One which, both of which related to Tumas Yadayim. It's really that Tumas Yadayim is specifically Tumas Yadayim of Svarim. The Gemara in Shamas in the first parak tells us that of the 18 things that Beishamai Bidei Beisilo on that day, one of them was that the Svarim Tumas Yadayim. As Exeremid Rabbanah, the way it's explained to us is that people would take the Truma, and they would store it with the Kisvei HaKodesh, with the scrolls, because they said Zeh Kodesh Zeh Kodesh. And then the mice would come, find the Truma, and they eat up the scrolls as well. So they made Exera that Sefer is Metame Sedayim, it's Metame Truma. And so that is discussed in Meseches Yadayim, and it leads to two different digressions. The one which is not relevant to this immediate question, Isaac, is a series of disputes between the Sadducees and the Pharisees, where the Mishnayos say, Amrut Stukim, Kovlam Anu Aleichem Prushim. We complain about you because you say this, and then you get the the Prushim say, Kovlam Anu Aleichem Stukim. Those Mishnayos are very important historically because some of these debates, in fact, are found, or some of these positions attributed to the Sadducees are actually found in some of the halachic texts found at Qumran, of whoever this sect was. That's very interesting in its own right. But the ones that are actually more relevant halach l'maisa in theory, at least to this question, it's not so much halach l'maisa, is the debate as to which svarim are metame seyadayim. There's a machlokes potentially between Beishamai and Beisilo whether Koheles is metame seyadayim, and it seems pretty clear that there are Tanaim who believe that Koheles was not written by Ruach HaKodesh. It's only Chachmasa Shel Shlomo, which means it's not metame seyadayim. Now, Professor Schneer Lyman is, I think, kind of pushed back on this. He wants to argue it's not inspired, but it's canonical. I'm not sure that that's actually correct. I mean, what does it mean to be canonical? Jews are studying the book. That's pretty clear. Whether or not I don't know what it means to be canonical. You know, when it comes to Tanakh, if it's not a halacha book and it's not divinely inspired, if that's your view of it. So you have several of the, you have a question about Shir Shirim. Rabbi Akiva reacts very strongly. Chas v'shalom, everybody, no one ever thought that Shir Shirim wasn't inspired because all the, you know, all Kisrei HaKodesh are Kodesh, but Shir Shirim is Kodesh Kadashim. So there's a discussion of Shir Shirim, there's a discussion of Koheles. So it does sound as if, you know, it's not entirely clear, you know, when canonization takes place. On the flip side, scholars like Gretz, in the 19th century, in what I'll call a very, it's easy to say this in retrospect, they always talk about the synod in Yavne, when they made the decisions as to what would be and what would be at. There's no evidence that there was this gathering in Yavne to decide what to canonize or not. This idea that someone gave a klap on the bima and said, Ad kan tkufas and ad kan sefer nevi'im, ad kan sefer tzuvim, is a very modern conception. I'm not sure that's how the ancients were working. So I suspect that canonization, to some extent, is a process that takes place over time, and there's a gray zone. By the time you get to the Brisa found in Gemara Baba Basra and Daf Yudal and Amadeus, which, again, it's hard to date the Brisa, but you'll assume early 3rd century, so then the Brisa can talk about Sidron Shel Nevi'im, Sidron Shel Ksuvim, you know, the order of the Nevi'im, the order of the Ksuvim, and that list is our list. But the canonization process is not, you know, and not every group necessarily does the same thing. Josephus does. Josephus speaks about, by the way, 22 books in Tanakh. It's assumed. I don't know if we have. I think we know this from other reasons, based upon his antiquities, that his books of Tanakh are our books of Tanakh. They assume that Eicha is considered part of Yirmiyahu, and Rus is considered part of Shmuel, I think, and that's how you get to 22 as opposed to 24. But again, some of this is desiring to see, you know, what is as always have been, and that's just not always the case. Yeah, before you ask your question, had it remind me, what was the, Isaac, you had a, 1 second. Okay, and why was that here? There was a reason for that being here. I know we're all enjoying this digression, but I just wanted to know. Okay, so we'll get back to it. Yes, Rabbi Friedman, you had a question. So the Gaonim also speak about Rabbanon Savoroi. In the Igeres Shrira, I'll explain. We think of Tanoim, you know, who are the rabbinic authorities until the end of the Mishnaic period, and then we think of the Amoraim as those named in the Gemara, you know, not from the Tanitic period, and then the Gaonim speak of Rabbanon Savoroi, which we often attribute as a stage in between the Amoraim and the Gaonim. The Gaonim, by definition, the Gaonim were the two heads of the Babylonian academies. You know, that, and the Gaonic, what's that? Sur and Pumbedisa. And those continue. They're not necessarily in Sur and Pumbedisa, but that's what, you know, it's like the Mir Yeshiva in Brooklyn. And those, the Gaonic's last great, you know, figures were Shri Ragon and his son Rav Haigon. After that, the Gaonit is already, before that, an institution in decline. But after the two of them, not so many people paying attention to it. And you get people like Shul Bar Chofni, you know, attacking the Rambam. How come you aren't listening to us, but nobody's listening to the Gaonim anymore? The yeshivas still exist for probably not a couple of centuries, but they really don't play much of a role. What's that? Yes, they really lost. You know, there was a time, certainly in the early Gaonic period, even down to, if you think of Shrier Gaon is being asked, you know, from the diaspora, if we can call it that, asked the Bavel, the origin of the Talmud, the origin of the Mishnah. That's what the Igeres Shri Ragon is about. It has two halves. The first half is rabbinic historiography, how the Mishnah was composed, how the Gemara was composed, Shri Ragon's view. And the second half is really just a history, and it's, I don't know if it's just a list, a history of the Gaonit, you know, and you get, that's where we get a list of all the names of people who wore the Rashi Yeshiva, the Gaonim, throughout that period. So there is this, I don't remember when they date, you date the first Gaonim to, but this Rabbanon Savaraya probably, what really is, it means they're anonymous, and they're putting things in the Gemara. What Shri Ragon attributes to them, at least, the famous Sugya, and this may be what he sees sort of an archetype for Savaraic activity, is the opening Sugya of Maseches Kiddushin, which is really a nice, poetic, literary, more homiletical than legal, you know, construction. Why is it? Why does the Mishnah say Isha Niknes as opposed to Isha Mikadesh? And why is it Shalosh as opposed to Shlosha and the word Derech? And so all that, it really has no halachic meaning. But it's sort of like a poetic introduction to the Masechta. And we find this, by the way, in a lot of Masechtas, where you get these elaborate, mostly literary constructions, which I would like to say often, they're the last things written in the Perek, even though they're placed first, and they know the conclusions of the later Sigyas in the Perek very often. So this is what is often assumed by scholars was the work of Rabbanan Tzevarai. It was kind of finishing up the editing and putting it together. But we don't really know, I think even Shuri says, their names we don't know. We don't know who these... I don't think we know who the Rabban and Savarai were, at least by name, but somebody is busy finishing up the Gemara. So it's not a, what is clear is that it's not a process where somebody gives you a clap on the beam and says, Ant kan kufas haTalmud, no more, it's a closed book. Yes. Well, now, Gaonic. There has been some challenges recently, I think incorrect, by a very fine scholar, but I think her work was attacked very strongly by Chaim Soloveitchik about questioning whether or not in the Balei HaTosfos considered the Talmud as binding. I know, Isaac, you're looking at me like what? Yes, and I think that it was a bad road to go down, and that's why Dr. Soloveitchik went after this. But I think it's pretty clear that the Balei HaTosfos and the Rambam and the Gaon are quite explicit. The Rambam regards the Talmud Bavli as the final arbiter of all matters. And that I don't think is a question. And it's not that I don't think that the Gaonim necessarily did either, but the text may not be quite as frozen until you get to some point into the Gaonic period. Okay. So now I know how we got to this. So I told you that there's a note here to Tosfos and Ksuvos Daf Beis Amud Beis, where the Gemara says in a particular point of Ksuvos, Parach Rav Achai. So Tosfos quotes Rashbam as saying, oh, that's Rav Achai Gaon, the author of the Shiltos, who's probably 9th or maybe even early 10th century, I don't remember the exact dates. And Tosfos thinks that's not the case. And Rashbam is partially responding to this odd Lashon, Parach Rav Achai, which is not a normal Lashon. Tosa says there that different Amorayim have different styles in terms of the way they're introduced. And this is one of the examples. Layit ala abaye. I don't think, layit is a very strong term. Layit means to curse. He would curse someone who would do this. So what they're saying is, this is a way of saying abaye expressed his disapproval. So, but this is the terminology you find. Layit ala abaye is probably used 5, 10, 15 times in Shas. Right? Was abaye a cursor? It's just...
Maybe.
Well, it's possible, but you see Amorayim have a particular style in terms of the way the Shas introduces their words, so that's all it means. I mean, yes, Abaye did approve of the practice, but as we observed earlier, Tosos commented at the beginning of the Masechta, I think on Daf Gimel, Daf Talib, that Havineinu is permitted under certain circumstances, and even Abaye presumably would agree to it, but he didn't like the idea of following Rabbi Yeshua's opinion that you should regularly do Havineinu, Abaye thought was inappropriate.
So, according to Rabbi Yeshua, it's a substitute, or it's...
According to Rabbi Yeshua, it's perfectly acceptable. That could be your default option, is you do Havineinu. Okay. Now, so, even that's what it's... I should say, that's what it sounds like, Rabbi, and if you look... It's 100 times, but... on Gaf Gimel Amid Aleph, so at the end of Tosfos, firstly, Eliyahu Hanavi found Rabbi Yosei that he was davening in a churva. We learned that Gemara a long while ago. And he told him, you should have davened the tefillah. He didn't want to daven on the derech, even though you're not supposed to normally enter a churva, abandoned building, because it's dangerous, it's suspicious. So Eliyahu, he said, I didn't want to daven in the street because I'm afraid people would interrupt me. So he said, you should have davened the tefillah kitzara. So Tosfos discusses the question, but concludes that this is actually Havineinu. So the question is, how could Eliyahu tell Rabbi Yosei, the great town of Rabbi Yosei, you should have davened Havineinu, if Layit ala Abaye? So Tosfos says, about 7 or 8 lines from the end of the Tosfos, V'afal, and Tosfos Dibur Maschol, Hoyelach HaLespal Tvila Katzara. So Tosfos says, V'afal Gav, De Layit ala Abaye, Aman de Mispal Havineinu, Hainu Davka Be'irav, V'besad de Mutar. Okay, so in other words, even Abaye would agree there are circumstances under which it's appropriate. Okay, Rabbi Yeshua presumably did not see any restriction. If there were no halachic impediment to reciting Havineinu, that would be fine. Okay, so now, putting aside Abaye's comments, are there times there might be a problem saying Havineinu? And what it really boils down to is, if you have to add things into the tefillah, then you might have a problem. So what do we add into our tefillah? Well, we add in Zachreinu and Aser Shemei Tshuva, but that's irrelevant because it's the first bracha. And we can cross out Micha Melcha and Uchsov L'chaim Tovim and the Sefer Chaim, which none of those might have existed anyway in the time of the Gemara, but either way, they're in the first and last bracha, so that's not a problem. It won't interfere with Havineinu. And HaMelech HaKadosh won't interfere with Havineinu. And Yalav Yavo won't interfere with Havineinu, and Alanisim won't interfere with Havineinu, and Mashiv HaRuach won't interfere with Havineinu. But there are at least two things that will interfere with Havineinu. What's that? The same Talumata L'Bracha, because you have no mention of Talumata here, and Atachonantanu, right, and Havdalah. Those are the two things. The Gemara seems not to be concerned about HaMelech HaMishpat. Maybe because the theme of Mishpat is mentioned there, it's just that, and Malchus, you know, is not necessary if it's not in the Chasim of the Bracha. I don't know why they're not concerned about Malchus Mishpat. HaMelech HaMishpat is from the Gemara. We saw that, you know, I think in the earlier in the part of the Masechta, and it was the fourth, third parak. So, it was the first parak, I think. So, but the Gemara is now going to raise what do you do with these two issues. So, first we get Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel, Kol Hashana Kula Mispalal Adam Havineinu Chutz Mimotzai Shabbos Umimitzai Yomim Tovim Mimnei Shetzarach Lomer Havdala Bechorin Hadas. So you can't say Havineinu on Motzai Shabbos and Motzai Yom Tov because you can't put up the Havdala's not in there. So Maskif La Rabba Bar Shmuel. Rabba Bar Shmuel asked a simple question. V'neimer Bracha Revius Lefnei Atzma. Why didn't you make a separate bracha atachanantanu? Milo tnan, have we not taught? Rabbi Akiva Omer bracha revias b'fnei atzma, and Rabbi Eliezer Omer behodas. So there are three opinions amongst the Tanaim as to where we say havdala, and this will be in the fifth parak, where do we say havdala on when we add havdala into tefillah? So one opinion, obviously, is the one that we do, which is we don't make a separate bracha, we put it in the bracha v'atachonin, because what is necessary for havdala, for being discriminating, not in the bad way, is Da'as. So that's why we put Havdalah there. And Rabbi Akiva says you have an independent fourth bracha, I guess before Atachonein, where you have some bracha, I assume, I would guess it concludes with Hamavda ben Kodesh Lachol, I don't know. And Rabbi Eliezer says you include it in the bracha of Hoda'ah, in the bracha of Logan, where we include Alanisim, so that's where you would put the bracha of Havdalah. So Rabbi Bar Shmuel says, well, why don't we just, since we can't put it in Havineinu, why don't we make it a bracha revias b'tanat for like Rabbi Akiva? So the Gemara says, that's a silly suggestion. Atu kol hashana kula mi'avdinik Rabbi Akiva, the hashtanami nabit. What, year round, do we make a separate bracha for Havdalah that we're going to start doing it now? And the Gemara says, kol hashana kula mi'taim elu avdinik Rabbi Akiva. Why don't we do Rabbi Akiva the rest of the year? Because Tamani Sari Tikkun, Tishasari Lo Tikkun. The Chachamim instituted 18 brachas, not 19. So you're supposed to daven Shimon Esrei. So you can't just add a new bracha on its own. Hachanami, so too by Havineinu. Sheva Tikkun, Tamani Lo Tikkun. They instituted this, and when you do Me'ein Shimon Esrei, you daven 7 brachas, not 8 brachas. That's why you can't add it as a separate bracha on its own. Maskif La Marzutra, okay? V'nichla La Michlal Havineinu. Why don't you, V'nichla La? Why don't you put it in Havineinu? Havineinu Hashem Elokeinu Hamavdim in Kodesh Lachol. Put it in there. Add a little line in there. The Gemara says Kasha.
Good idea.
We don't have an answer to the question. Now, note though that despite the fact that the Gemara says Kasha, Kasha is not a rejection. Kasha is, it's a question. There's an answer somehow. And in fact, we do accept Shmuel's statement that you can't add, for whatever reason, Havdalah into Havineinu, but the Gemara doesn't know why. In other words, it seems plausible you should be able to. Which leads us now to the next issue. Amar Rav Bibi Bar Abaye, Kol Hashana Kula Mispalel Adam Havineinu Chutz Miyimos HaGeshamim. That already is a kind of a big carve-out. You know, like when you say, all year round you can say Havineinu, except for Motzei Shabbos. Okay, yeah, it means 95% of the time or something like that. Here he says, all year round, except for in Eretz Yisrael, the 6 months almost between, you know, when you start saying Talmud the Bracha. It's a funny way of formulating it. You know, at least in Chutz Laaretz, it's only about 4 months, you know. But anyway, So why? Mipnei she'tzarach lomar she'ela bebirkas hashanim. You have to have she'ela in birkas hashanim, and you can't because it's not in Havininu. Simasik flamar zutra. V'nichlala michlal. Why don't you put it in Havinenu? V'dashneinu b'na'osar tzecha v'sein talam atar. So the Gemara says, nah, you know why you can't do that? Because asila trude. You're going to make a mistake. And you do sort of understand this, that when you're reciting something bal peh, and they certainly weren't reciting from Siddurim, you get in a flow, right? Some of the challenge is always getting...
You make the same mistake with the big one.
What's that?
You make the same mistake with the big one.
No, that's not the... You're right. You could forget it like we all tend to forget it when we shift over. But here the Gemara is saying, let's say you're not going to forget, but you're going to get confused in the middle because you're used to a kind of rhythm. You say, v'dashtenu b'nos ha-secha, v'unufitzoseinu me'ar b'atakabeit, and you say the same time of, and then you're just kind of stuck. So that is kind of the way our memory seems to work, where we, you know, you get into a flow, and that's how you finish it. It's often hard getting started, but once you get started, you keep going.
I agree with Josh. It's kind of similar to what we have now, because we kind of get into the same flow.
No. No.
And if you're saying for 6 months, right, you could argue it's the same, you know.
Okay, the Gemara says, you'll see, I'm saying that they thought that it would confuse people. You know,
you get off the train.
You get off the train.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they were afraid of.
Which we don't have, but...
Right,
because we just say the wrong thing.
Right, well, no, that's a separate question. No, my point is that there are two issues here. One is that, one exists whether you make it part of Havinenu or part of the full bracha, is that you're going to forget. That's not what the Gemara's concern is. Asi la trude means you're going to get off the train, you're going to have a hard time getting back on. So the Gemara says, Ihachi, if that's a valid reason for not including the same Talamata, then Havdalah b'chonin adamis das nami asila trude. Why did the Gemara leave the previous section as kasha? That should have been the same reason. So Amri, the Gemara says, Hasam came into Asya b'tchila slusa lamatrid. Now there it's right at the beginning. You're getting started, you're kind of focused, you're not in flow yet, so there it's easier to do it. But Hacha came into Asya b'emtzit slusa matrid. Okay, so then, Maskat Rashi, the name of Shamei Atfila. Why don't you incorporate the same Talamat Avrach and Shamei Atfila? The Amar Rav Tanchum, Amar Rav Asi, Ta'av Elo Hiskir Gevuras Geshamim B'tchias Amesim, Machzirin Oso. If you fail to say Mashiv HaRuach Amorin HaGeshem, Gevuras Geshamim, if you fail to say that in the second bracha, you have to go back. We're going to talk about this. But we know our practice is if you forget to say it and you finish Mechayim Eis in the Bracha, you start Shemot Esrei again. Okay, this is actually a debate between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli, a debate between the Yerushalmi actually what it means, Machzirna, so we'll get to that. But for the moment, if you forget Mashiv HaMorid HaGeshem, you have to go back. She'ela b'birkas Hashanim, ein Machzirna, so if you forget to say the same Talamat al Bracha in Barei Haleinu, you don't have to go back. And Neisha Yachol HaOmra b'Shamei Atfila, because you can't add in Shamei Atfila. You forgot it there, you're inserted in Shamei Atfila. And then finally, Havdalah b'chonein hadas in Masirna. So if you forget Havdalah in Motzei Shabbos or Motzei Yom Tov, you don't have to go back. Neisha yachol la'omra al hakos. Because you can say, because you have Havdalah al hakos.
But I think we discussed this before. I asked you the question. You said you can't, because you, a couple of weeks back, discussed eating. You said you can't say Havdalah al hakos in Shabbat.
No. What I said is Baruch Hamavdo Ben Kodesh Shalchol after Shemon Esrei doesn't help you.
Okay, but you can say in Shema Kolinu.
Absolutely. Yes. No. What I'm saying is I always thought Baruch Hamavdo Ben Kodesh Shalchol is you substitute afterwards. It's not. I mean, it allows you to do malacha, let's say, but it doesn't allow you to eat. And if you ate after that, you'd have to go back and daven again. As we'll eventually deal with that in the fifth parak. And perhaps even more relevant, one of the questions we'll talk about in the next section when we focus on each of these. Havdalah chonin hadas, the Rishon talk about what if you're not going to have a kos. If you know that you're not going to have a kos for everybody, let's say until by the time Tuesday night rolls around, I'm going to keep it simple. It may be earlier than that. That's a whole discussion. It's a machlokas. But let's say for sure, according to everybody, if you know that you will not have access to a kos for the next 3 days, so you will not be able to make Havdalah kos, you have to repeat your Shemon Esrei to say Atachonotanim. Like, Baruch Hamad Kosol will not cut it. Well, that's a question of Havdalah. We view the week as beginning on Wednesday, and it ends on Tuesday. And Shabbos, and we talk about Kodem HaShabbos, the Gemara says, what is considered before Shabbos? Beginning Wednesday. And La'achar Shabbos goes up until Tuesday.
That's a halachic week.
Yes. But, Yeah, yes, in a certain sense, it is a halachic week. I understand the Torah's presentation is you work 6 days and you rest the seven. It's true, but for certain purposes, the way it's formulated, like you make Havdalah after Shabbos. When is it still after Shabbos? So it, everybody agrees that...
It
right, one until. So it's assumed that the Shabbos goes, the post-Shabbos period goes until the end of Tuesday. The pre-Shabbos period begins on Wednesday. And that is reflected in other areas. For example, that you, the Gemara in Shabbos, the first para quotes Tosefta, from later in the Masechta, Emaf Sligim Mesfina, you know, Pach Sligim Yom Kodem HaShabbos. I'm pretty sure that includes Wednesday. You can't take a boat ride, start, you know, you can't put yourself, whatever it means to not take a boat, begins on, the prohibition begins on Wednesday. You know, so for example, the Rishonim, the Ramban and the Baal HaMor both say you're not allowed to do that because you may very well have to be Milchal Shabbos, and it looks like you put yourself in that situation. So why is Tuesday okay? The answer is because Tuesday is not Kodem Shabbos, it's the week before. And there are many Rishonim, not every, this is a debate, but many Rishonim hold you to make Havdalah up to the end of Tuesday. And one thing which I don't know that it's real, but that may not be the reason why, but some have pointed out, if you look at the Shir Shal Yom of Wednesday, so we every other Shir Shal Yom you say one chapter of Psalms, but this one you would say Psalm 94 and then you begin the Chunaranana. Now I don't know how old that practice is,
well,
but that's beginning of Kabbalah Shabbos.
Not everybody does it though, right? If you like
the Yom
with the Yom.
I don't know. I just know what's in our Siddurim.
Yeah.
I don't know how far back our Yom practice.
The Germans don't do it because I have a small sitter and it's not in the.
Right. So all that would mean, though, it's interesting, if the practice emerged after Kabbalah Shabbos became a thing, after the Arizal's practice, you know, worked its way into Europe, which is probably not till the 1700s, if the practice began afterwards to add it, it also reflects that. In other words, comes Wednesday Shir Shayom, and we say L'chun Aran at the end because we want to make an indication that, in fact, that this is the beginning of Shabbos.
So L'chun Aran was added during the Arizal's time?
Oh, you mean Kabbalah Shabbos?
No. Just the Lachut.
On Wednesday, I have no idea. I have no idea. I have no idea when. The only thing I know is I have some sitter that I had been downloaded a digital image from the 16th century, and they don't have the Shir Shayom at all.
Oh.
So, yeah, I don't know when people actually started saying the Shir Shayom. In the Beis HaMikdash, I know when they said it, but I don't know when.
This prayer we have.
Yeah, but I don't know when we started saying it. I have no idea. But I was struck because I downloaded this sitter, printed it with whatever, one of those services that will print these, you know, old books for you. And I was surprised. I use it occasionally, so I wanted to see what the sitter used to look like as a novelty. I mean, I know what the card in the Sukh is. And there was no Shir Shayom in it. So,
I don't know.
What?
Correct.
Also, I have to double check with him, but I'm pretty sure that
that doesn't surprise me. And the question would be, when does it first come in for Ashkenazim, for Sfardim, and so on?
In the Beis HaMikdash, since we're talking about it, when did they say it? In the morning?
I believe they said it both with Tamei Shel Shachar and the Tamei Shel Bein Arba'in. Yeah, they said both with both. That's for the Shir Shayom. Shachar Yavim Omen the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so. Anyway, so the bottom line, the question, there's a lot of fun stuff here, but what was the Gemara's question? Well, why can't you say it in Shomea Tefillah? Why not say the same Talmud at the end? Well, you're not going to get confused. You're right at the end. Because if you forget to say the same Talmud Tebracha on a regular Shomea Tefillah, a full 18 brachos, you can say it in Shomea Tefillah. So the Gemara's answer is no. Ta'ashani. We allow you post facto, b'di'eved, to recite the same Talmud Tebracha in Shomea Tefillah, rather than making you go back. But to set it up, what's that?
Can't be the formulation.
Correct. That cannot be the ideal formulation, because the brachos of Shemone Esrei, as you have in the Gemara Megillah explains, the Gemara at the beginning of the, I think, second parak in Megillah, talks about the institution of the middle brachos, and it explains why the orders, how each thing connects to the other. So ideally, the Vesein Talmud HaBracha belongs, the request for Parnasa belongs where it is. So to add that as L'chatchila, in Shomea Tefillah, the Gemara says, does not make any sense. And therefore you cannot say Havinenu and by including the same Talmud Matan Bracha at the end in the Bracha of Shomea Tefillah. Okay. Now, before we start the Gemara, I just want to give you the Maskana LaHalacha, which is not clear from the Gemara, because it's debated amongst the Rishonim, just so that you are aware. I'm sure most of you are aware anyway at one time or another. Mashiva Ruach Amorid HaGeshem, And this is collected from the Gemara and the Rishonim here. So during the rainy season, we say Masha Baruch Moreh HaGeshem, which begins on the last day of Sukkot, the eighth day of Sukkot, and goes until the first day of Pesach. That's true in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz. If you forget to say Masha Baruch Moreh HaGeshem, if you forget to say Moreh HaGeshem, Ruach doesn't matter. If you forget to say Geshem and you don't say anything, then you have to then, and you have finished the Brach of Mechayeh HaMesim, then you have to restart your Shemona Esrei. If you said the same Morid Hatal or Mashiv Aruch Morid Hatal during the rainy season for Mechayeh HaMesim, for what's called, let me just preface this before I comment. There's a difference between Hazkara and She'ela. Hazkara means just to mention. It means to praise God for being the giver of the rain. That's in the second bracha. It's not Mashiv Aruch Morid HaGeshem. God makes the wind blow and brings the rain down. It's not a request. It's just praising God, as for the most part, the first three brachas are just that. She'ela is the same talamata lebracha. So in terms of Hazkara, in terms of Mechayeh HaMesim, if you forget to mention, if you say Morid Hatal during the rainy season, that's sufficient. It's enough of a Shevach, even though it's not Geshem, it's enough of a Shevach that you don't have to repeat. So those who say Morid Hatal have a big advantage when we go from...
Is that why they put it in?
No, I don't think so. The Gemara says that Ruchos and Tlalim are never Netzarim. Wind and dew, God never fully withholds, and therefore it doesn't matter whether you ask for it or don't ask for it. That's why if you don't say Morid Hatal, it's not a big issue. If you don't say the same Talmud Avracha, you just say the same Matal Avracha, you also don't have to go back. But in Mechayeh HaMesim, because it's not a request for rain, it's just the praise of God. If you said Morid Hatal or Mashiv Aruch Morid Hatal, you don't have to go back. Now there are opinions, but
nothing you could do in that first part to make you go back.
No, if you said nothing during the rainy season, I mean you didn't even say Morid Hatal, or during the summer months, during the spring and summer months when rain is a curse. And the Yerushalmi talks about this. Maybe we'll have a chance, not this week, but next week to look at this. Because it's a curse, rain is really bad. Here, we don't experience the same thing in Eretz Yisrael. But the crops are drying in the fields, so you're in a lot of trouble when it rains. So therefore, you have to go back as well.
If you said
Geshem, just Geshem, the Ruach doesn't matter. If you say Geshem during the summer months, or if you say nothing during the winter months, you have to go back in the second bracha. According to the Yerushalmi, and some Rishonim think the Bavli might agree, but it doesn't work with the Nusach we just read of the Braisa, and we don't accept Allah. According to the Yerushalmi, you could also say Mashiv Aruch Moreh HaGeshem, or I don't know what you would do if you said it when you shouldn't have, in Shomei HaTfilah. Now that may sound totally foreign to you, because it's totally foreign to us. We don't do such a thing. If you missed it, and if you've gotten it wrong enough, and you finish the second bracha, go back to the starting line. Now, when it comes
to... It looks like just coming back to the Shir Shoyom, it was a machlokas whether they said it in the afternoon.
They said Eish, for sure they said Shir on the Karban, and I think I can prove it to you in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah.
Okay. I don't know if it's accurate, but he said the Aruch HaShulchan said it wasn't said in the afternoon.
So I think if you look at Tosos, look at the Gemara and Tosos and Rosh Hashanah on Lamed Beis and Beis. So I think it's pretty clear that they ate, it's absolutely clear they said a Shira with the Tamesh Shobain Harvayim. And the whole issue there was they didn't know which Shira to say, because they didn't know whether it was going to come Rosh Hashanah or to do the regular Shira. That's the simple reading of the Gemara. So, okay.
I
will try to check into that. But in the meantime, now, moving on to the question of Havdalah. Havdalah is fairly straightforward. Havdalah, you don't have to repeat. You cannot say it in Shomea Tfilah. I want to sort of explain why. Why is it that according to the way most Rishonim read the Bavli, the Yerushalmi says you can say Mashiv Aruch Moreh HaGeshem in Shomei HaTfilah. Now, if you said Geshem when you weren't supposed to, what can you say in Shomei HaTfilah to fix it? I don't know. I don't know what you do there. Okay, but the Yerushalmi says you can. The Bavli, the way we have the Girsa that we just read, that if you forgot the same Talmud Avracha, you can say it in Shomei HaTfilah, makes it very clear that you can't say Mashiv Aruch in Shomei HaTfilah. Because the first line in the Braisa says, if you got to be Mazkir Gvurz Neshamim, Machir Nasho. If you forgot She'ela, then you don't say Machir Nasho, because you can say it in Shomei HaTfilah. There's some Tosus and other Rishonim point out that it may be that some don't have the first line. A different girsa. So maybe the Bavli doesn't disagree with Yushalmi, but we pass in the Bavli disagrees with Yushalmi. And if you forget Mashiv Rahmar Hageshem, or you said it when you weren't and you said nothing, or you said it during the non rainy season and you finished the bracha, gotta start the Amida over. Period. That's pretty clear. When it comes to Havdalah, if you forget it, you can't say it, you cannot say it in Shomei Tefillah. The reason you can't say it in Shomei Tefillah, the Rishonim say here, is the same reason why you can't say Mashiv HaRuach, which is Shomei Tefillah is only for Bakashos. You can't say Shvachim in Shomei Tefillah. If you want to sing God's praises, there's a separate problem as well, which is singing God's praises may run into a problem of have you said enough? I think we learned this Gemara already. Or it's going to come in the fifth parak, where someone gets up there and starts saying, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Hanorav, Ha'ba'ajuz, he gets a whole list, and the Tanner Amor is sitting there, waits until he says, okay, are you done? And have you said enough? The only reason we can say, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, is because Moshe Rabbeinu said it. Other than that, we couldn't possibly say it. In fact, they say that's why it was called, they were called the Anshei Knesset Hagdola, because they were hechziru atara liyoshna, because the original was hakel hagadol hagibor vanora, and then when Yirmiyahu saw the Beis Hamikdash being destroyed, he said, "How can you say hanora or something like that? Where is God's noros?" A couple of different passages in Tanakh where one word is left out, and then the Anshei Knesset Hagdola restored it. But the bottom line is to say shvachim of God is a fraught enterprise, because if you're sticking to a right. In other words, it's like telling the millionaire, it's like praising the millionaire, the billionaire for being a millionaire. You've understated his, that's the Gemara. Gemara uses millionaire and billionaire, but they use a similar idea with, so that's why you can't say Atachanantanu in Shomei Tefillah, because it's not a bakasha, it's not a request. It's a shevach, in the same way that Mashiv HaRuach is a shevach. The reason why you can say, what comes next, the same Talmud HaBracha, is because that's a bakasha, that's asking God for doing rain. Now, when it comes to Atachanotanu, you do not go back. You do not say in Shema Tefillah. You do Hadalah Kos. If you're not going to have, you're not going to have a Kos. Certainly, but we'll see some of the details probably next time. But if you're not going to have a Kos by the time, certainly Tuesday is over. To keep it simple for now, then you repeat Shema Esrei. I presume if you realize in the middle, you just go back to Atachoni. When it comes to the same Talamat Levracha Sheila. In Birkas Hashanim, so there the Braisa told us that if you forget it, you don't go back. You say it in Shomea Tefillah. The only question becomes the following: what if you forgot to say it in Shomea Tefillah? So it's clear that you have to go back. But the question is, where do you have to go back? Now, in the Yushalmi, it's clear you have to go back only to Shomea Tefillah. But that is the discussion in the Rishonim here. Larry, you have that quizzical look because you know that's not what we do.
Right.
Our practice is that if you missed it in Shomei Tefillah, now you got to go back to Birkas Hashanim. And so that's your grace period is to get it in Shomei Tefillah. But if you miss it, now you don't have to go back to the beginning of Shomei Tefillah, but you got to go back to Barei Cholenu.
Unless you're finished.
And then if you finish Shomei Tefillah, which tomorrow we'll talk about on the next Amud for next week, then if, whatever the definition of finishing is, go back to the starting line, yeah. Okay.
You just look at the sitter.
Read the yeah, there's something that's printed.
Yeah, that's it. No, but for these guys, I mean, we have printed Siddhar.
Yeah, that is true.
I'm guessing they were more focused when they died, to a certain extent. Because
probably.
They didn't have a book. Ever.
So. Anyway, I only have to worry about you remembering. That's all. So that's the bottom line. Mashiv HaRuach, if you miss the Mechaye Mesim in a way that's disqualifying, start the Shmon Esrei again. The same Talamat HaLevracha, Atachan Antanu, you don't bother repeating unless you're not going to have to Alal HaKos.
And you can't put it in.
You cannot put it in Shomei Tefillah. And the same Talamat HaLevracha, you have a makeup opportunity in Shomei Tefillah. Missing that, you go back. Because it is a bakasha. Missing that, you go back to a Barei Chaleinu, and if you finish your Shmon Esrei, whatever the definition of finishing is, which Gemara will talk about in the next page, so then you'll have to repeat the entire Shmon Esrei. Okay, so I think we'll stop here, and next week we'll start to get into, we'll see the details of the Gemara, we'll take a look at what the Rishonim have.
Shall I read a summary?